So diligence. That's a good word, isn't it? It sort of rolls off your tongue nicely, feels good. Diligent people are responsible and respectable people, right? So it has this sort of nice sense to it. I mean, they might not be the most interesting people in the world, but diligent people are worthy people. Now, energy, that's a Sedona word. That's a whole different thing. If we lived in Massachusetts, you know, in Cambridge, our fair city, Massachusetts, there would be a very clear definition of energy, which I will read to you. I haven't memorized it since high school. But it would be the amount of newtons acting on an object multiplied by the distance over which the object is moved. Right? That's energy. But we live in Flagstaff, and so instead energy has all these connotations of mystical, indefinable implications, right? So diligence, energy, both of these words I think are preferable to effort, don't you? I mean, as soon as you say effort, it sounds self-defeating, right? If I were to say that today's talk is about effort, then you'd probably all feel inadequate before I even got through the introduction. So those are three words that have all been used to translate the word for the topic today, which is virya, which is a Pali word, the word for the fifth of the most excellent practices that we have been learning about over the past few months. Sometimes it's diligence, sometimes it's energy, sometimes it's effort. And the word that I choose to use is going to affect your relationship on it because of all the baggage that it brings with it. Your relationship to it, I should say, to the practice. And then to make matters worse, each of those English words has a bunch of different Pali words that sometimes are called that. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that as much as I love linguistics, I can't actually come up with a very clear definition for this particular practice. And I can't guarantee that when I'm using the words, I'm using them accurately as in terms of academic use. But what I can do, which is probably going to be more useful anyway, is to describe a process, which in my research of these words, I have come to understand and I think is pretty accurate in terms of how the process works, whether or not I'm being perfectly accurate about the words. So here's the process. It starts with energy, right? So energy arises in us. We use that energy to do something, right? And that using of energy to do something is effort. Now, if you use effort appropriately, which is using your effort in the right place at the right time with balance, etc., etc., with commitment and determination and sustaining it, then that becomes diligence. So all three of the words are related. And my proposition is that this fifth most excellent practice is really the practice of this whole process, not just one piece of it. So that's what I'm going to talk about. And I'll talk a little bit, I'll give an overview in more of a theoretical sense, but then we're going to jump into some practical things. So the process. Energy arises, we use it, that is called effort, and appropriately used effort with a few other factors is diligence. What do I mean when I say energy? In this particular moment, what I mean is pretty much what those guys at MIT were talking about. It's what fuels our ability to do work. You have mental energy, which enables you to meditate or to study or to pay attention to some talk like I'm giving now. Some of you might feel a lack of mental energy the more I talk. There's physical energy, which enables you to do your walking meditation or to play tennis or, you know, to do anything else that's physical. So energy, as I understand it in this context, is not really any different from energy in the whole wide world. It's what fuels you on your path. So you have some energy and you do some work with it, right? You do something and that's your effort. So that's actually a simple thing that's not as unpleasant as we think of it as being. But unfortunately, a lot of people think of their practice just as work. You know, it's something you have to put an effort into. It always seems to be so much effort to sit and meditate, effort to get out to the whatever it is you're doing. But that's not inherent in the effort. Right, so you can choose to put effort into things that are helpful and wholesome, or into things that, you know, are wasting your energy on things that are not wholesome or helpful. Or even if you're putting your energy in the right place, you can use too much of it or not enough of it. And all of those things are examples of inappropriate effort. And that's when effort is unpleasant. If you can learn to figure out where and when and how to apply your effort appropriately, then it actually becomes very pleasant and satisfying. But it really is energy effectively used, so effective, appropriate effort feels really good. You know, it's even better than staying in bed all day, which is one of my favorite things to do. And you probably all sort of get a sense of that. You've been in that groove. So once you determine how and where and when to apply that effort, you then need to sustain it. And that also can carry a lot of connotations with it. But I don't mean that you have to sustain that particular application of effort. What you're actually sustaining is the attitude of applying effort appropriately. So you're putting effort into your sit, you're trying to sustain it. If you don't succeed in sustaining it, that's not a failure of diligence. That's sleepiness or whatever. It's over the course of time, constantly assessing and adapting to situations with appropriate effort. That is the sustaining of effort. And it's also important to notice that sometimes appropriate effort is no effort at all. So when we talk about sustaining effort, don't start thinking that this is just unrelenting hard work all the time. It's actually not. Sometimes it's totally relaxing. And the sustaining part of it is just a habit you get into of constantly being mindful of a situation and adapting to it. So there's also an element of the third part, that appropriately applied effort and sustained effort. There's also a commitment that is required for the definition of diligence. And this is a commitment, in this case, to your practice. It doesn't have to be a formal commitment, you know, but if you don't have some sort of commitment to yourself that I'm going to do this, I'm going to try and do this anyway, then it can be really easy for everything just to turn into a real slog. And then you don't have any commitment behind it to keep you going. And sometimes your practice is going to be really hard anyway. So don't make it even worse by doing it half-heartedly. And again, commitment doesn't mean that you never screw up. I won't even say screw up because it's not a screw up, but it might feel like that to you. Commitment just means that you've determined you're going to try and do this. And so it's important to make a commitment, at least to yourself, to determine that you're going to do this practice, whatever this practice means to you, whatever your path is, whatever activities are on that path, and in whatever way is comfortable for you to make that commitment. Maybe it's for a period of time or whatever. But it's important to be consciously aware, to be telling yourself that I'm gonna try and do this. So I experienced both sides of this process when I first started meditating, and I'll explain that because it might actually make this make more sense and sound like less of an academic lecture. So when I started meditating, the experience that I had was one that resulted in my feeling a lot of energy, extra energy, more energy than I had before, both physically and mentally, emotionally. And I put a lot of effort into my new practice. I would sit a minimum of an hour a day, sometimes an hour and a half, full attention, never sleepy, every day, never missed a day for the first, I don't know, year or so. I was really proud of that. But that was, you know, that was it. I was applying my energy. I was making appropriate effort. It was balanced at the time. It was fruitful. You know, I was committed to it. I was doing it really well. I was proud of myself, and I saw results, and they were good results and undeniable results, and that was great. But over time, my energy level started sort of going back to normal, which for me is actually pretty low, and it's different for everyone, but my energy level came back to a lower state, but I still tried to maintain the same effort. I still tried to keep sitting for as long and doing all the things I was doing, and of course it was harder to do because I didn't have the energy to do it. So then I started thinking, oh no, I'm losing it, whatever it is. I'm actually not so good at this, and you know, I'm not sitting as much as I should, and now I've missed a day, and you know, what's going on, and maybe this isn't actually for me. And so then I'm getting disappointed with myself, and I start judging myself, and I start doubting. And then my sits are not as concentrated, and it seems like everything is just really difficult. And I got to a point where I was thinking, you know, what's going on? Is this it? Maybe this practice is not for me after all. Now, fortunately, I can't remember if I thought to do it or someone else suggested it, but I phoned my teacher, Shinzen, who had a very encouraging talk with me, and what I remember about that talk is him saying, it's okay that you don't sit as much as you used to. Everything changes. Your needs change, your resources change. Now is a different period for you. So that actually was good, and I kept going, and I'm glad that I did. But now, 10 years later, I look back on that, and I can see exactly what was happening. I had an unexpected amount of high energy. I used it to do stuff, so I applied effort in a way that was apparently appropriate and balanced and diligent because I was seeing benefit. But then I was not monitoring or understanding that the appropriate application of effort it's going to change over time. So my energy reduced, but I didn't adapt to that. And that one thing of my energy reducing led to this sort of cascade of consequences such that my practice almost collapsed. So it's good to understand this process and to understand, you know, how your energy fits into your effort and what the diligence really means. So that you can adapt and change as situations adapt and change around you. Today I want to talk more about the energy itself and how you can modify it in little ways and such. So increasing and maintaining energy. Bearing in mind that the energy we're talking about in this context of mindfulness or a spiritual path or whatever you want to call it is the same stuff that we're talking about when we say, I don't have the energy to go out tonight. Okay, there's nothing mystical or different about it. So consequently, the first place you want to start is in the broad picture, right? So energy in your life. And there's a whole lot of information out there about how to increase your energy. And I don't think I'd probably have to lecture most of you about it, but you know, you do a Google search, and instantly you've got this long list. You know, I've got vegetable juice and herbs and fewer carbs and better sleep and exercise and B vitamins and caffeine and more sunlight and hot baths and loud music. Recent research says that loud music will increase your energy. Antidepressants are supposed to. So, you know, I've actually tried a lot of these. And some work for some people and some work for other people. There's physiological disorders that can affect your energy. So, of course, the first thing to look at is, you know, what are you putting into your body? What are you not putting into your body? What are you doing with your body? Are you healthy? And knowing you all, I think that probably that's something that you already do. But it's worth repeating that your experience in your meditation and in your mindfulness practice is going to be directly impacted by your physical situation. So if you're always hyperactive or falling asleep when you meditate, the first thing you want to look at is, are you always hyperactive or falling asleep anyway? And is that something you need to address? Another thing that is helpful to bear in mind here is that, as I understand it, I'm no doctor, but as I understand it, everyone has their own sort of base level of energy, which is natural for them. And everyone's normal base level of energy is going to be different. So some people are just naturally very energetic or hyperactive. And some people like me are very naturally low energy. And as much as I want not to be like that, I have to finally come to the conclusion that my natural level of energy is a little bit lower. Now, there are things you can do to temporarily boost energy or calm energy, but it's important, I think, and self-defeating to try and change what's your natural level by artificial means. So for example, when I go driving to California to visit my mom, I'll drink energy drinks. And they really do help me stay awake. They actually help more than the drugs that I'm taking for my sleep disorder, which is supposed to, they're stimulants. But I don't drink these energy drinks every day, all day long, in order to have that higher level of alertness perpetually. So when we're talking now about boosting energy or calming energy, we're talking about short-term modifications for the situation, and also a reminder to not compare yourself to other people, which I often find myself doing. You know, how come I can't hold a high-level full-time job and write 3 books and go skiing every winter and sailing every summer all the time and still have 3 kids and time left to watch movies. Some people can do that, but it's not me. So assuming that you are as healthy as you are able to be, and you're all taking care of yourselves and doing what you need to do, then we can look at some specifics related to a meditation mindfulness practice. So probably, maybe it's just my bias, but it seems to me like one of the most common manifestations of energy level issues in meditating is being sleepy when you're meditating, right? My experience, I noticed this especially in my recent retreat, is that I can be wide awake and enthusiastic and alert outside the meditation hall. And as soon as I step inside and sit down, I desperately need to sleep. And then as soon as I step outside again, I'm wide awake. So I think that's pretty normal. And one reason I think that's normal is because I look at the Zen folks, the school of Zen, at least the Rinzai Zen, they address this issue of sleepiness in meditation directly with their traditional practices. So for example, between sitting, they do this very formalized, fast walking style of meditation where they all line up very close to each other and walk in lockstep at high speed around the grounds of the temple or wherever they are. And then they go back in and sit. And between the physical motion of your body and the mental activity of not bumping into the person in front of you, and often the environmental difference between perhaps a warm Zendo and icy outside, or cool Zendo and you know, high summer in Tucson outside, the alternating between walking and sitting really will sort of wake up your body a bit. It may not wake up your mind, especially if you're doing Zen, because they only let you sleep for a few hours every night. But it physically will wake up your body. And then in the sitting portion, in a Zen retreat, there's a monk whose job is to walk around with a stick called the keisaku and hit people who are falling asleep. Now, to be fair to them, this is formalized and skilled hitting with a stick. So the person who is dozing off has to acknowledge the guy with the keisaku will come up to them, and the meditating person suddenly is wide awake because they've been caught. And, you know, they have to do this bowing thing, and then the meditator bends over in such a way, and the guy with the stick is very well trained to be able to hit a particular group of muscles on the back of the shoulder in a particular way that releases muscular tension and stimulates mental activity. So it actually feels really good. I've been on the receiving end of that, and it got so that I wanted them to come over and hit me, because it's like, whew, relaxes your body and you're awake. It's not a punishment. It's a tool for physical and mental alertness. It may feel like a punishment because the embarrassment of being caught and everybody in the Zendo knows that you are sleeping, that may, you know, that might be unpleasant. But the actual purpose of it is wakefulness, and it works. So I'm not suggesting that I start walking around with a stick. For one thing, I'm not trained in that. But I bring this up to point out that, you know, this is a long and honorable tradition. If we look at this, then we can see that there's actually nothing wrong with using tools or tricks or whatever to help with our energy. So, you know, maybe some people feel like it's cheating to stand up when they're sleepy in a meditation hall. It's not cheating. It's a skillful thing to do if it's going to help you stay awake. And the fact that it's part of the tradition of this huge chunk of contemplative people, meaning the Zen folk, you know, if they can do it, we can do it, right? So it's okay, it's not cheating, and it's recommended to do what you need to do to monitor and modify your energy level. So for us, what that might mean is, like I say, standing up in place. If you're falling asleep, you know, on your cushion, you can get up and walk around, do walking meditation. When you do walking meditation, maybe you don't want to do slow walking if you're sleepy. Maybe you want to go out into the neighborhood and walk briskly around the block and do meditation while you're doing that. But there's nothing about the slow walking that is intrinsically more meditative than the fast walking. So you can open your eyes. I often open my eyes. Look into a bright light for a minute. That'll stimulate your brain. And as much as Western mindfulness practice has been associated, I'll say, with vegetarianism and substance freeness, I heartily advocate a strong cup of coffee before you go meditate at a time when you might be sleepy. So there's also things you can do on a more subtle internal level. Whenever I sit to meditate, I immediately, and I do this so habitually that I don't even really think that I'm think about doing it now, but I assess where my energy level is. And am I sleepy? Am I likely to become sleepy right now? Am I dull and unconcentrated? Occasionally, I will actually be a little hyperactive. Don't drink too much coffee before the sit. So I assess that, and then I choose a meditation technique that's going to be appropriate for that energy level. So if I'm sleepy, first of all, I often will start with my eyes open, and if I become more alert, for example, in the morning, the coffee hasn't kicked in yet, but after a time it does, then I can close my eyes and carry on. But I also choose a technique that requires more mental activity. So, for example, for me, that would be typically a noting technique, where I'm noticing maybe sensations or sounds, if there's a lot of sounds around, because that technique requires enough attention to be able to identify what it is that I'm paying attention to. And I use a label because that requires more energy also. Some of you have done Goenka, because he does this body scan thing. I haven't learned it either, but I understand that that's very mentally intensive. You know, when you start out, it just feels like you're using all of your mental energy to do that. Well, if you're having to be mentally intensive, then that might be a good thing to do when you're feeling sluggish. It might, you know, sort of kick in the energy. And on the flip side, if I'm sleepy, I'm not going to choose some technique that is a relaxation technique or a calming technique, like an open focus. I probably would be instantly asleep. If I'm sitting alone and I'm really sleepy, I often will just get up and do walking meditation instead of sitting meditation. And by the way, you're welcome to do that here. When the schedule says sit and walk and sit and walk, you can walk and sit and walk and sit if you want, or you can walk and walk and walk and walk, whatever you need to do. Right, so sometimes if I'm too active, if there's too much going on in my mind, for example, then I might want to try calming practice to start with, a tranquility practice, like a relaxation practice, or a just sitting where you are aware of everything. On the other hand, if I'm that mentally active, maybe that's enough, lots of extra energy that I can use on a noting practice so that I can get into even more detail in what I'm noting. So you can see how there's, you choose your options according to what your situation is. And if you have something that you do all the time and you just keep on falling asleep all the time, maybe you want to try something else that you can use sometimes when that's not working. Now, something important to remember here is your equanimity, right? So despite the fact that I will choose a technique with that requires more mental energy, and despite the fact that my eyes are open and that I've had coffee, it's not uncommon that I fall asleep anyway. So you do what you can do, and then what happens is what happens. And it's really important not to think that you failed. You haven't failed. You've just done some effort, and then something happened, and then when you wake up, you notice that. That's what we do. And in fact, that's a really good opportunity for strengthening your equanimity skills, right? So either way you win. Either you succeed in being alert and awake or calm enough to not be too scattered or whatever it is, and then you can build your concentration and your clarity, which I think I've talked to you all about before. And if not, then we'll just say that if you are able to focus as much as you want to, you're increasing your focus skills. And if you don't succeed in that, I shouldn't use the word succeed because that implies fail. If that doesn't happen and you do fall asleep or you do spend half an hour completely scattered and daydreaming, then what an opportunity to strengthen your equanimity skills and your non-judgmental skills. And how are you going to learn to stop judging yourself if there's never anything that you would typically judge yourself about? So either way you win, right? So an interesting thing that I've read is that some of the traditional texts will say that the investigation into experience, which is essentially this mindfulness technique that we're doing, observing the moment, will increase energy. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes it happens in a sit that you sit down sleepy and you wake up energized. Doesn't always happen, but apparently it does happen for some people. But I experienced that when I first started, right? That I had this increase in my baseline energy for several months. My mistake was taking that to be permanent, but that can happen. And you can even find, I experienced that I didn't need as much sleep for a while. And I can't explain that to you, but it is something that apparently happens. So that's good. If you need energy to meditate, then you meditate. Which actually sounds like a sort of catch-22, because if you don't have the energy to meditate, how are you going to meditate to get the energy to meditate? But if you look at the broader picture, it's not so contradictory, because you may be doing meditation without the energy to be very alert, but over the long period of time, the fact that you're engaging in that is going to slowly raise your level, if not your energy level, your skills to manage and manipulate your energy a little bit. I just have marked here to remind everybody that, first of all, individual experiences are going to be different. So when the person next to you is wide awake and you're not, one thing, they may not be wide awake at all. But you don't want to compare yourself to what anyone else is doing. And it's going to change for you moment to moment. So if you think, like I did, oh, finally I got it, I can sit for an hour and a half and I've got more energy, and then it changes, that's just what happens. And that's what you're monitoring in order to adapt what you are applying your energy to and how you are applying it.